Hey, friendly reminder, this podcast is not for kids or people who have a stick up their ass.
Friday, 5:58 p.m.
I'm sleeping with my best friend's husband.
I think my uncle killed someone in his suicide.
I am a sugar baby.
I'm a soccer mom addicted to Adderall.
I think my sister is actually my uncle's kid.
My husband bought his hooker a car whenever I was helping him.
What's your secret? Welcome back to another week of Beyond the Secret. My name is Ace Fanning, and it is currently Cinco de Mayo. I remember seeing a post in 2019 about how awesome 2020 was going to be because Cinco de Mayo would fall on a Taco Tuesday, and Valentine's Day was on a Friday, and 420 was literally the entire month of April. Halloween was on a Saturday. Like, you get the point. Like, it was going to be a big year. And yet, here we are celebrating Cinco de Mayo at home. Heating up taquitos in the oven. Oh, I'm not trying to be negative, but damn. 2020 has really not lived up to the hype. But good news, I've got a new episode today, and I'm really pumped about it because it's definitely different than anything else I've ever done. And I feel like at this point in our relationship, I'm looking to spice things up a bit. I mean, technically, you'd think that, like, spicing it up would be episodes like the BDSM ones and swingers and webcams, but I feel like that's old news for you guys. But before we begin, I just want to remind you guys about our closed Facebook group where we like to talk about the episodes. And you have to understand, for me, I have been sitting with some of these stories for such a long time, and I get so excited when I finally get to talk to other people about them. So join using the link in the show notes, and then participate in the conversation. I want to hear your guys' thoughts about things. I want to hear how you reacted, all that good stuff. That's it. Just wanted to put that little reminder out there. Now, on to the show. This week's secret, searching for the baby I put up for adoption. Tell me about the type of girl that you were at 15.
I was a freshman, and where I'm from, our junior high school was 7th, 8th, 9th grade. So, you know, we had a freshman dance coming up, which is kind of, you know, your introduction out of junior high into high school. And that was an exciting time. And I lived with my mom. My parents were divorced. I had a good relationship with my dad, but lived with my mom. And, you know, it was just that typical junior high school girl with friends, and we would hang out, and nothing really different, I don't think, than anybody else.
Would you say that you were more of a good girl? Were you in a rebellious phase? Like, where were you at?
I would say kind of in between. You know, living with a single mom, she worked and she went to school as well. And so a lot of times I was on my own. You know, when you're 15 and you're on your own, you tend to get into a little bit of trouble here and there, and nothing major, you know, staying out later than I should have, probably, you know, hanging out with kids that were a little bit older than me, that kind of thing. You know, I wasn't like the class a whore, so to speak, or anything like that. I wasn't sleeping with a bunch of guys, nothing like that. At that point, I had had sex with one guy. So kind of in between, I wasn't a good girl, but I wasn't, you know, a bad girl at all, I don't think. And like I said, it was coming up on our freshman dance that year, and I had planned on going alone and with, you know, my girlfriends, and my best friend that I was going to go with, she happened to meet a guy, and he asked if he could take her to the dance. And he was in high school as 15-year-old freshman girls. Like, you know, we just thought that was cool. You know, there was a high school guy that was interested in her. And they made plans to go to the dance together. But her and I were very, very close. When I say best friends, we were really, you know, best friends. So the plan was still that I was going to go with them. We were all, the three of us were going to go to the dance together. And he was old enough to drive. So we were going to go in his car. And meanwhile, leading up to the dance, I was introduced to one of his friends. And he didn't stand out to me or anything, but he kind of started hanging around a little bit. He would come around when they would come around. And he wasn't really hitting on me, so to say, but you could kind of tell he was a little bit interested. And I wasn't really, you know, he was, like I said, he was okay. Nothing that stood out to me, but, you know, he was kind of fun to hang out with. So the night of the dance, I was getting ready at home and taking pictures. My dad had come. He lived in a different town from us, but my dad had come to take pictures. And the plan was still, I'm going to this dance by myself, or basically by myself, but with my friend and her boyfriend. And comes time for them to pick me up, the other friend is there. And he's dressed, not necessarily a tuxedo, but he's dressed for a dance. And I'm kind of just surprised, like, you know, what's going on? And he said, I want to take you to this dance. And it was really kind of shocking, but at the same time, it was kind of enticing as a 15-year-old girl. I don't know how to explain it, but it was kind of like, oh, wow, like he must really want to take me to this dance. He just confident enough that he dressed up and he showed up on my doorstep and he's like, I want to take you to this dance, which as I get into the story, that really will have a lot of significance as to how our relationship progressed. So we went and we had a good time. It was fun. You know, it was pretty innocent. I was a freshman. He was a sophomore. Just, you know, a dance. We danced. We had fun. I introduced him to my friends, my other friends at school. They all thought it was kind of cool that we were at the dance with high school boys rather than the lame boys that we were in junior high school with. And then after that, we just kind of started dating.
What was your relationship like? Like 15 relationships. Mm-hmm. Can completely vary. Sometimes people are very hot and heavy for 15-year-olds, and then sometimes it's a little bit more relaxed puppy love situation.
At first, it was more platonic than anything. But overall, I have to say, it was very controlling on his end. And again, as a 15-year-old, I thought he really likes me because he calls me all day long just to make sure that I'm at home, just to make sure that I'm not on the phone with anybody else. And when we would go out on dates, sometimes I didn't even know that there was a date planned for that night. He would just show up at my door and say, we're going wherever, get dressed. This is where we're going. And this is what we're going to do. And at this point, it was closer to summer. So we were going to graduation parties because he knew, you know, guys in high school and girls in high school. So he was taking me to these high school graduation parties. And again, it was pretty cool. It was fun, you know. I was getting introduced to high school kids. You know, I was going to be going to high school with the following year. So I'm thinking, oh, this is going to make the transition even easier because I'm going to know some people at my high school rather than just the kids that I go to school with. Again, it was enticing, but I didn't realize at the time that he was controlling my whole life. And what really stood out to me was one time he introduced me to somebody and introduced me as his fiance. And I about shit my pants. I'm like, wait a minute, what are you talking about, fiance? It really, really caught me off guard. And he just kind of laughed it off. And I'm thinking, I'm 15 years old, you know, this is really nothing serious for me. We're having fun, you know, dating. I'm not looking that far into the future. And that kind of scared me. But it's funny because, you know, you hear people say they had sex with somebody like, you know, one time and they get pregnant. And it's hard to believe, but that's honest to God truth. I honestly positive that was the only encounter that we had as far as having sex. And then his mom, I think, got a job out of town. I don't remember exactly why, but his family moved away. They moved out of state. And leading up to that, he got really, really controlling to the point, like I said, when he called me his fiance, it got progressively worse after that. He would tell me a specific time, I'm going to call your house. And if you're not home, basically, you're going to be in trouble. I don't ever know what trouble meant, like what he could have done to me, but it was just the thought of he had to know at all times where I was, what I was doing. even what the clothes I was wearing, it was very weird for a teenage relationship. And they moved away and we kind of had broke up before that. We were just, I was avoiding his calls. I was just trying not to see him because I just didn't, I didn't like where the relationship was going. And thankfully they moved away and they moved out of state. Now this is back in the 90s where, you know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have, you know, Google or ways to find people. And he was kind of just gone from my life. Several weeks later is when I started to realize that something wasn't right. Like I said, I was 15 years old and I would say I was a mature 15. In my mind, I was thinking, can it be possible that I'm pregnant? But at the same time, I'm thinking, no way, there's no way. There's just no way I'm pregnant. I'm 15, no, there's just no way. And there came a point where I realized, yes, I am pregnant. And I took a little home pregnancy test and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say, who to talk to. It blew my mind. And he was gone. Had no idea how to find him. We didn't share any mutual friends, really. That's when it just started to get it was really hard. Really, really hard.
I really want to know if you're able to remember back on mm-hmm. it. Obviously, you're 15 and you're scared. Are you scared because you just can't see yourself as a mom? Are you scared because your mom is going to flip her shit? Like,
there's a couple reasons. Of course, I'm 15. I can't imagine myself as a mother. I was still having fun going out, hanging with my friends, getting ready to get my driver's license, all of that stuff. And so I will say that I am Caucasian. I'm Mexican Caucasian, but mostly I'm Caucasian. The man that I was dating was African-American. He was a black guy. And my mom, at the time, she had a boyfriend that was living with us. And he was a very, very abusive man, mostly to her, but to me as well. And he was very, very racist, even to the point where he would call her racist names for being Mexican. And she would just laugh it off for whatever reason. But that situation also scared me because I knew that he probably wasn't going anywhere as much as bad as he was. I can tell you how horrible of a man he was and how racist he was. The first time I met him, my mom started dating him right around the time I started seeing the guy who became the father of my daughter. And I come home from school one day and my mom's sitting in the living room with this man. And she says, I want you to meet so-and-so, this guy I was telling you about. She had told me that she was going on a date with some guy and that they were going on what she called a Coke date, like Coca-Cola date, because he was a recovering alcoholic. And right away, even as a 15-year-old, that threw up a warning sign in my head, like, oh, great. Not to say that he couldn't completely recover, but my mind was saying, oh, great, he's recovering. How long is that going to last? Because my mom didn't have a great dating past in the first place. But very first thing he says to me is he looks at me and he says, so I hear you like to fuck niggers. And I just stood there. I was shocked. I didn't know how to react. I thought my mom was going to react. She didn't say anything. She just kind of looked at the floor. So I left and I stayed gone for about a week. But aside from that, that was the biggest thing. Like, first of all, there's this man living with me and my mother who's abusing both of us. And he's racist. And I'm pregnant with a biracial child. How's that going to work? That was probably the biggest factor into why I was terrified. I was so young and naive. Hell, I shouldn't even been having sex with anybody, even if it was just one time. I was even in the mindset in the very beginning, like, oh my gosh, if I ignore it, maybe it'll just go away. Of course, it's not just going to go away, but your brain is overloaded. I didn't know for sure what I was going to do. I knew I wasn't going to have an abortion. I knew that much. I'm not one of those people that judge. If you have an abortion, if that's what works for you, that's fine. I just knew that I couldn't do that. So I just kept trying to figure out a way to tell people or to share it with anybody and to deal with it, but I just didn't know how to do that. And the more I procrastinated, the more time went on, and I just kept figuring out a way to not look pregnant. I just didn't tell anybody.
Do you think that if you had told your mom when you found out that she would have forced you to get an abortion, or do you think that she would have kicked you out?
She would have tried real hard to force me to get an abortion. Yes, for sure. And I'm not saying that because she's a bad person or anything like that. My mother and I owe my mom to death, but we've had a rough relationship. But, you know, I try to forgive things that she's done or ways that she didn't protect me. And I hate to say that, but I have to be honest. There were times that she didn't protect me.
When you finally got to the point when you told your mom, how did she react?
And that was another thing. You know, I guess I just kept putting off procrastinating. It's just, and I was sitting in journalism class in school. This is sophomore year. I had turned 16 just a couple months before. And sitting in journalism class, and my best friend had the seat behind me. I was still pretty good at hiding it, you know, just wearing baggy clothes or whatnot. And I was having terrible, terrible pains in my back. And it didn't register to me that I was probably in labor because I had, and let me back up for 1 second. Shame on me. And not telling anybody, I didn't have any prenatal care. I didn't see a doctor, which is awful. But again, as a 15-year-old, I didn't know much about pregnancy. I didn't have any sisters or anything like that. I was the youngest of much. I didn't really know anything about pregnancy and prenatal and all that stuff. So I never saw a doctor. Thank God she was born healthy, though. But so I didn't really know what labor was even going to feel like. I was still in denial. I can't even lie. I was still in denial that this was going to happen, that I was going to have a baby. And I just kept having these really bad pains in my back. And I was rocking back and forth. It was just so bad. And I remember my friend kept asking me, are you okay? You know, what's wrong? I'm like, I don't feel good. I don't feel good. I'm just going to go home. So I went home and my mom was at work when I got there. And so I just kind of sat there in my bed. I laugh. It's not funny, but I laugh at the memory because it's just amazing. But I just kept rocking back and forth on my bed because it was so painful. My mom finally came home. She walked in the door and she came into my bedroom and I'm just sitting there just, you know, and she said, well, what is wrong with you? And I said, Mom, I'm pregnant. And I think I'm in labor. And the rest of that night was kind of a blur, but the evil boyfriend was there. So, you know, he drove us to the hospital. And I remember so specifically the doctor who delivered her. I'll never forget her name. It's not because she helped me, but because she was so mean to me. She was so mean. She laid into me the whole time because I didn't have prenatal care and I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what to expect. Nothing. No idea. And I just remember, you know, being on the hospital bed, you know, my legs up in stirrups and her screaming at me, just screaming at me to push. And it's hard. It's, you know, it's just any other doctor or nurse that would come in, she would make a point of telling them that I didn't have prenatal care and they didn't know what to expect. You know, they had the ICU, you know, the NICU on standby because they were just expecting this horrible baby to be born, I guess. I don't know. And it was hours. I don't even remember specifically how long it took or what time she was born. I just remember, you know, my mom coming in and out and finally her being born. And the plan had been that I wasn't going to see her. You know, I didn't know it was a girl, but the plan had been that I wasn't going to see the baby because they said that, you know, when you're giving a child up for adoption, that it just makes it harder. And I just remember her being born and hearing her cry. I had to hold her. I had to see her. So I begged them, you know, please let me see her. They did. They let me hold her. And at that moment, I thought to myself, you know what? You can do this. We can do this together. I'm looking at her thinking to myself, we can do this. You know, we can make this work, you know, somehow. And it wasn't a minute later, and my mom walked in, and her boyfriend was behind her. And when my daughter was born, she had like these kind of almond-shaped eyes. You know, really pretty almond-shaped eyes. And he walked in, and my first thought was, why is he here? Because like I said, he had been abusive to both of us, but, you know, why is he here? I didn't want him there. And he walked up to my bed, and he looks down at her, and he says, what the hell is she? Why are her eyes like that? What is she, Chinese? And just... I just knew at that moment, there's no way I can take her home to him. I can't. Just can't. I can't do it. I can't raise her. I just felt like I had to protect her, no matter what I felt, no matter how much I wanted to take her home. I knew that I couldn't, that I knew that somebody else could give her a better life than I could. And that was all that mattered to me, was that she have a decent life and I could give it to her. There's just no way. She was healthy, but they put her in the NICU just for about a week, just to make sure that everything was okay with her. And they let me see her. My mom and I would go up every day, and my mom would joke that she was like a little football, because we would just both sit there and pass her back and forth and just hold her and just love on her as much as we could. Even then, even as much as I loved her and as much as time as I spent with her, I still knew. I just knew that I couldn't take her home. And she meant so much to me that I had to do what was right for her. I went through the county job and family services for the adoption. I remember the day that I had to go to court. I don't remember my mom being there. I imagine as a juvenile, she would have been. I don't have any specific memory of her there. I just remember sitting at the long table. You know, it's like a courtroom. And sitting at that long table, and the judge sitting there and the social worker sitting next to me. I was crying so hard that I couldn't speak. I could barely catch my breath. And it's really harsh. I don't know if they mean to be harsh, or they just want you to understand what you're doing, what you're giving up. And I just remember the judge saying to me, you know, you realize you're giving up every right that you have. After today, you have absolutely no rights to this child, and whatever specifically it is that they say. And I was just crying so hard that I couldn't really even answer him. I could just nod my head. I remember him looking at the social worker and saying, "Are you sure that this is what she wants?" And we both said, "Yeah, this is what has to be done," basically, at this point. And you know, that day I had to sign away my rights to her, and that was the end of that. And it was very, very hard to, it's very hard to deal with. I cried a lot after that. I remember a specific friend that I had. I was just crying her arms day after day after day, just because eventually my one friend caught on to, back up to when I had her. Of course, I had to stay in the hospital for a couple of days, you know, when you have a baby. And it was hard to hide from my friends that I was in the hospital. So I told a couple of friends that I was in the hospital, and they didn't keep me on the maternity floor like they normally do. Like if you're giving the child up for adoption, they move you to a general, just a regular hospital room. And my best friend came up to the hospital to see me, and she said she could just something told her. She said she could just look at me and tell that I had a baby. She just knew that something was different about me. So she flat out asked me one day when I got out of the hospital, and then I broke down and told her. And from there, just kind of went to a couple other friends and a couple real close family members that I had had a baby, but I was giving her up for adoption. Some people didn't understand. At this point, I didn't even tell my dad. I was so ashamed. I couldn't tell my dad. I really, really looked up to my dad. I just couldn't tell him. So nobody on my dad's side of the family knew. Like I said, we lived in separate towns. You know, after that court date, that was just a really, really hard, hard time.
Do you remember the last time that you saw your daughter? And do you remember, did you know that that was going to be the last time?
I did. She was going to be out of the NICU and then placed into foster care until the adoption went through, which was just probably not even a few weeks. If I remember correctly, just a matter of a week or two. So yeah, I saw her at the hospital and I wrote her a little letter, bought a little, like a miniature hope chest, like a little wooden hope chest. And, you know, they put a bracelet on the mom and the baby in the hospital, a little plastic bracelet. And I took her bracelet and I took my bracelet and I put them in this little hope chest with the letter. And the letter was explaining to her why I did what I did, explaining to her that I loved her and that I chose to give her life, but I also chose to give her to a family that could care for her better than I could. And I was told by the social worker that the parents had agreed that when they thought she was ready to be told that she was adopted, whenever they decided in her life, if they ever decided to tell her that, that they would give her that little hope chest.
After you gave birth, did you, in your head, give your daughter a name?
Oh, I did name her. I did, yes. I signed her birth certificate, and she was given a name. They changed her name, so she doesn't go by, but I named her Brittany, and her middle name was Marie. I had a sister that passed away as an infant, and her middle name was Marie. So I named her Brittany, and she was Brittany to me and to my friends. When we would talk about her over the years, you know, we would have conversations, and we would always call her Brittany. And, you know, people would say, you know, you ever think about Brittany? Not very often. Every once in a while, people would, one or two of my friends would, you know, ask about her. But like I said before, most of the time it was, you know, it's like when someone dies, you don't know what to say. You don't know if someone wants to think about it or not. But yes, she had a name.
What was your life like after the adoption?
It was rough at first. And then it was real tough because my mom's boyfriend, he got mad at me one day. Him and I used to fight a lot because it got to the point where I was just so tired of him being drunk all the time and beating on my mom and just everything that was going on. And I just remember I slammed my door one day and he come in afterwards and just started choking me. And he also had a son that was about a year or two younger than me. And he was at the house at that time visiting us. And his son ran into the room and helped me get him off of me. And I left that day. I went and stayed with a friend for quite some time. And during that time that I was away with my friend, the boyfriend took it upon himself to call my dad. And he told my dad that I had had a baby and gave it up for adoption. Needless to say, my dad was very disappointed in me. I don't want to say that he blamed me or you know, I really don't know what he was feeling. We didn't speak for a little while after that. My dad was very upset that I didn't come to him or ask him for help or anything like that, I guess. But in my mind, I was just ashamed. I just didn't have the courage to tell my dad that I was pregnant or even that I had delivered and or, you know, give it for adoption. It was very selfish of me, I guess. I just didn't know how to handle it. I didn't handle it well. But so that was really rough, that period of time, still with my mom and her boyfriend and my dad being upset with me. But my dad and I, you know, we made up. And the boyfriend, there came a time where he beat my mom within an inch of her life. I had went to my dad's for the weekend because that was how the setup was, like every other weekend with my dad. And he beat her within an inch of her life. And finally, somebody called the cops. She didn't call the cops, but I guess the fight was in public, kind of like down the street from our house. So a neighbor called the police and he went to prison. So that was a blessing for a little while. So it was just me and my mom again. And so I just kind of went back to my normal life, you know, going to high school and hanging out with my friends.
I've never met somebody that at least I'm aware of who has put a baby up for adoption. I imagine that there is a lot of grieving that goes on with that. And I'm curious what that looked like for you.
It was really hard. I don't know if I was born this way or if even the adoption had anything to do with it, but I'm the type of person that I do not wear my heart on my sleeve. I hide my emotions. I do not cry in front of people. It's not that I'm a hard ass. I'm very emotional. I just do not show it well. Of course, I'm sure my husband and my children know that I love them, but I'm not a lovey-dovey person whatsoever. I'm not your typical female. So in the beginning, my grieving was very public. It was very open. I could not hide it. It was just so hard. Every single day, I second guessed what I did. I felt like I was the worst human being on earth. I felt that everybody who knew was judging me. And there were people who judged me. There were people who would say to me, how could you do that? How could you just give her away like that? And it just was so harsh. And it was so hard because at the same time, I was feeling the same way. Even though I knew I did it for what I felt was best for her, you know, I would still second guess myself, like, you know, you could have figured out a way. You could have done something, and I would punish myself that way. But after a while, I started to really hide the way I felt. But, you know, every year on her birthday or Christmas or everything, she was always on my mind or just in general, because I knew that she was in the same county where I lived. And I would, for the next 25 years, would see people, or when I knew she was still a little girl, I would see little girls at the mall or, you know, at the grocery store and, you know, look real quick again, like, wait a minute, you know, could that be her? And I never, ever forgot about her. I never stopped thinking about her. Even when I had my other children, she was always on my mind. And like I said, my grieving was inside because nobody knew. There was only a few people that knew. And my children, I didn't tell them until later, much, much later. So I didn't have anyone to share, really to share that grief with. And a lot of people who did know just kind of, they probably didn't know how to approach me with it either, or ask me questions or grieve with me. They probably maybe thought that I just wanted to forget about it. And then people not knowing, there were so many times in my life where the subject of adoption would come up and people would just say, that's so selfish. I don't know how anybody could do that. It'd just be real snooty about it. And that really hurt me because, you know, I would want to explain, you know, don't judge people because you don't know the situation. You don't know how hard it is, how it tore me up. It tore me up.
Did you have moments where you knew that you did the right thing?
Yeah. Yeah, there were moments. Well, you know, I honestly, no, I can't even say that I did, because even when my life was hard, when times were hard for me, I would think, well, you know, at least things are better for her. But then I would say, but how do I know that? I don't even know that. I know that, you know, the social worker told me she was going to a great family, and that she, that they had an older child that they had adopted prior to her. So she was going to have a sibling, and, you know, but I watched Dateline. I don't think Dateline was that back then, but I'm just one of those people, you know, I'm drawn to true crime and things like that. And I would think to myself, yeah, I mean, how do we know these people are good just because, you know, they passed a few classes or whatever you have to do for an adoption. I don't mean to sound cynical, but, you know, I would worry about that. Like, I hope she was adopted by great people. I really do, but I didn't know. So I honestly, I don't know if I can ever say that I knew I did the right thing, other than at least I knew she wasn't in the shitty situation that I was in, and just hope that she wasn't in her own shitty situation.
After she was put up for adoption, what happened in your life following?
You know, it's almost like you lose a loved one, you grieve for a while, and then, you know, your life starts to go back to normal. You pretty much have to. And so I just, you know, was going to school and hanging out with my friends, and I ended up meeting a guy that I dated for most of high school. Well, yeah, from sophomore year on, we were dating, and I ended up getting pregnant my senior year of high school by him, had the baby my senior year, and you know, got out of high school, and he went to the military. And we didn't get married. We ended up having a second child. Our relationship was pretty rocky, to say the least. He wasn't exactly a faithful man. He ended up having other children as well. So by the time my second child was two, by the time my daughter was, I don't know, one or two, him and I broke up. So it was pretty much, you know, single mom with the two kids. You know, my mom and dad were still in my life. Yeah, it was just, being a single parent is hard, I can tell you that much. But I ended up meeting my current husband a few years after. We've been together now for about 20 years.
How long ago did your first daughter turn 18?
12 years ago, she turned 18. And by law, I was not, even if I wanted to look her up by law, till they're 21. You're not allowed to even try to look them up. And even then, it's pretty difficult. But the laws at our state changed several years ago and made it a little bit easier for people to search for their parents or their child that they have given up.
When the time came where she would have been legally able to look you up, did you start thinking that you wanted to look her up, or did you start thinking, I wonder if she's going to find me?
Mm-hmm. All of the above. I really wanted to. But at the same time, I told myself, you know, who are you to do that to her? You know, what if she doesn't know she's adopted? What if her parents never told her that? You know, I was telling myself, what gives you the right to interfere in her life now as an adult? You don't know, you know, what consequences that could bring. But I desperately, desperately wanted, even if I didn't contact her, I just wanted to know that she was okay, that she was out there, that she had a good life. And I had spoken to a few friends about it, and, you know, they all would get excited, like, oh my God, if you ever find her, that would be so cool. You know, you could be on Oprah, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was kind of a fantasy to me. And at the same time, I wondered, is she going to try to find me? So I would think to myself, you know, maybe I should tell my children that, you know, that she's out there. And it's so hard for me. I wanted to tell them, but at the same time, I was so afraid of what they would think of me, if they would be ashamed of me, because I felt so ashamed of myself. I was afraid that my children would be ashamed of me as well, that they had a sibling out there, you know, they had a sister out there that they didn't know, and that I got pregnant at 15, because I was so strict with my daughter growing up about having sex and having a lot of boyfriends, and I didn't want the same thing to happen to her. My biggest fear was that my daughter would get pregnant and she would go through the same thing that I went through. I just was scared all the way around. I didn't know what doors it would open. You know, like I said, there's so many parties involved. There's me, there's her biological father, there's her adoptive parents. You know, there's, you know, if she has siblings. I didn't feel I had the right to disrupt so many people's lives, but I really, really wanted to. So it was very hard.
During all of this time, did you ever try to search out her birth father?
So to this day, I don't know who, but someone in my small circle of friends. So he ended up coming back to town probably 6 months to a year after the adoption took place. He came back to town with some, I guess, his girlfriend that he had in the state that he had moved to. And he was just kind of going around town visiting people. And he went to my friend's house to ask where I was living. And I don't think I lived at the same place that I did when we were dating. She didn't tell him where I lived, but he ended up running into another one of my friends, and someone in that circle, no one ever admitted who it was, but someone in that circle told him that I was pregnant and I had had a baby and I had given her up for adoption. And like I was saying before, how controlling he was very upset. He was very mad, which I'm not blaming him at all. Of course he's upset. Someone had his baby and now the baby's been adopted. And apparently he went down to the Job and Family Services that handled the adoption and tried to, I guess, get her back or whatever. But before the adoption took place, like I said, there was no internet or anything like that. But when the father's not around, they do everything in their power to try to find him. They put ads in the newspaper. They try to contact people that knew him. You know, we did as much as we possibly could to try to find him before the adoption took place. I did not deliberately do anything that he wouldn't know that the baby was out there, but we just could not find him. We didn't know where they went. So he was rightfully upset, but like I said, it wasn't deliberate. But of course, once I gave them rights up and once he didn't respond to the ads that were placed in the newspaper and all of those things, that the adoption went through. And once it goes through, you know, there's no going back. After that, he left town again and I never heard from him. After that, I never really, you know, his name would come up here and there, but just his name used to give me chills. I just had so many bad memories of him just because of that controlling personality is very difficult for me to deal with. And so I never really tried to look him up. And as far as I knew, he never came back to where we lived permanently. He just came back every now and then to visit, but him and I never had any contact after that.
When did the momentum start to pick up on your search for her?
Once my children, you know, that I raised became adults, I started thinking more about her and reconnecting with her and knowing that as adults, my children would probably be more mature and able to handle what I was going to tell them. My daughter has a very outgoing personality and she's very family oriented. And I knew the minute I told her, she'd be all about, oh, I want to find my sister. I want to find her. I want to find her. So I knew that if I told my children about her, that was going to be the next step. That for certain my daughter was going to want to find her. My son, I wasn't so sure. He's very indifferent about everything. He's just one of those people. I have an aunt who volunteers as what is called a search angel. She does searches for people who have been adopted or who have given children up for adoption. She does this on her own time. It's free. She just gets into the archives and does research and, you know, just tries to find people and reconnect people. So, and she lives in a different state from me, but we keep in touch on Facebook and whatnot. You know, I would see her stories all the time that she would post on Facebook about people that have come to her, you know, trying to find someone and the reunion stories. And 9 times out of 10, it seemed like the reunion stories were good. You know, like I said, I was afraid of disrupting her life. I didn't want to mess up her life and I didn't want to shock her. I was afraid of what she would think of me too. You know, being a little bit selfish, I was afraid that she would hate me and that would hurt even more than it did not knowing, I guess. So I got to talking to my aunt one day and I just started asking her, you know, how reunions normally go. I'm like, do you just, you know, post the happy ones or, you know, not that she posted them all the time, but every now and then she would put a story out there of a reunion. So I was just trying to get a feel for how it normally went. Are there hurt feelings? Do they usually stay in contact? You know, how does it normally go? And, you know, she told me that, of course, there are bad stories where, you know, the child didn't want to be found or the parent didn't want to be found. And sometimes it's just hard to handle. But she said that most of the time it is happy, at least for the two parties involved, at least for the parent and the child. Right around this time, the laws in our state changed where it made it much easier for the adoptive child to find the parent. So we decided to wait a little while and she registered my name on the site for our state so that if my daughter tried to search for me, that it would be my information would be there ready for her. So we thought, you know, we'll go like this for a while and see what happens. Nothing ever came of it. You know, we're thinking either she doesn't want to find me or she just doesn't know about this or she doesn't know she's adopted. You know, we didn't really know. So a little time went on and my heart just kept telling me, you know, you need to try to find her and just see where she is, just see what's going on. So I finally gave my aunt the okay. I told her, I see what you can find. You know, just let me know. And I don't even think it was a week later. And she sent me a message on Facebook and she said, so I have some news. And, you know, my heart just started pounding. You know, I didn't know what to expect. Is it going to be good news? Is it going to be bad news? You know, what is she going to tell me? And she says, I found her and I have some pictures. And I couldn't believe it. I did not expect a picture. I'm like, how did you find a picture of her? But by this time there's Facebook and, you know, everything else. So she said, whenever you're ready, I'll send it to you. So I had to literally, and I was at work. I was at work when she sent me this and I worked in an office and it's like, oh my God, and I'm sitting there trying not to be emotional. You know, I didn't want any of my coworkers to see that I'm like freaking out here. So I just calmed myself down a little bit and I'm like, okay, go ahead and send it to me. And first she sends me the file that shows where she was born, her birth date and all that stuff, just to verify. Yeah, that's her. I'm pretty sure that's her. And it had her birth name and then it had her adoptive parents' names. Then I click on another file and there's her picture. And I just was, I don't even know how to describe it. I was stunned because, you know, there she was. And the moment I looked at that picture, I'm like, absolutely, that's her. I mean, she was just so beautiful and just so, she looked so much like she did, you know, that last time I held her in the hospital. And, like I said, I'm not a crier. I'm not a happy crier. Like I don't cry when I'm happy type person, but I just wanted to just break down and cry at that moment. And I just was, I couldn't stop smiling because the picture was her, I would say she's probably in her late teens, early teens maybe. And she was obviously from the picture, she was a dancer. She had on ballet suit and like looked like she was in like a dance studio. And I'm just grinning from ear to ear because my first thought was, wow, if she's a ballerina, if she's in ballet classes, then she must have grown up, you know, at least decently, because I would have never been able to afford to put her in ballet classes. You know, that was my first thought. My thinking, oh my gosh, okay, hopefully, you know, she had a good life. Like, this is positive. She looks happy. She's beautiful. You know, she's dancing. And I couldn't stop smiling. I was so excited, but at the same time, I was so nervous. I mean, and I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't believe it. I was just shocked. I immediately sent the picture to my best friend, to her and I are still friends from school. And she called me and she's just screaming and we're both just, you know, oh my God, I can't believe it. That's her. I can't believe it. We found her. And just absolutely amazing feeling. But at the same time, it was a very sad feeling because even though I found her, I didn't know, will I ever see her? Will I ever talk to her? Is this going to be the only picture I ever have of her? You know, it was very, very, very conflicting emotions going on. And once the excitement wore down, you know, I started getting sad. I started getting really nervous. Like, what do I do now? And the first thing I did was I got on her Facebook and it was public. And I just started stalking her Facebook page. It probably sounds crazy, but I just wanted to see her. I just wanted to see her life. And from what I saw on Facebook, she was amazing. She was a dancer and she's a bikini model. I mean, she's just amazing. She was a cheerleader for a professional sports team. I mean, I'm just seeing all this stuff on Facebook and I'm just beside myself. I'm crying because I'm looking like, oh my God, it looks like she has had a wonderful life. And while I'm so happy about that, at the same time, I'm just devastated because I'm telling myself more and more, don't mess that up. Don't you dare jump into her life now when she, you know, she's, what was she, 25 years old? And she's got a life and, you know, she moved out of the state. And that's another thing, too. I found out that she grew up in the same city where me and my kids were living. Our city has 3 high schools. She went to a different high school. She was, of course, 2 years above my son, but she was a majorette at her high school. And our high school football teams and basketball teams would play each other. And I was very into high school sports and my kids were into sports. And I would go to all the games when we would play her school. So I know that I saw her out there as a majorette and in the parades that we would have. I must have seen her at some point. I mean, she was literally in the same city and it just blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. But like I said, I kept telling myself, you know, how do you interrupt her life? How do you even go about this? And I struggled with it for a long time. It was almost 2 years before I made any kind of contact with her or tried to make any kind of contact with her.
I'm literally just like, I got total goosebumps when you said the part about being at the games and stuff, because I was thinking in my head, I was like, please tell me you fucking went to those games.
I did, every one of them. And after a while, there were even times that we could pinpoint when her and my daughter were at the same parties and, you know, things like that.
After the next 2 years, what were the next steps for you?
Like I said, I kept thinking about it. I would follow her on Facebook and just see what she was doing in her life. And I was at home one night with my youngest daughter and we were just having a really good night and having a good conversation. And somehow I just blurted out, you know, I need to tell you something. And as soon as I said that, I kind of shocked myself, but I knew there was no going back. Like, yeah, well, here you go. So I proceeded to tell my daughter. As much as this, I didn't get into a long drawn out story. I just told her basically this is what's going on. You know, I had a child, I had to give her up for adoption, blah, blah, blah. And I found her and, you know, I think I want to contact her, but I wanted to talk to you and your brother first. Now my son is in the military, so he was not around for this conversation. But we had that conversation. So then I'm like, okay. And she, again, a nervous, what was the reaction going to be? But she was amazing. She was so excited, and like I knew she would be. So that kind of set the ball in motion. So I contacted my aunt. Now, I didn't tell my son because I was trying to figure out a way to tell him that wasn't over the phone. But like I said, he's in the military, so and he was away, so I didn't know when that was going to be. But I felt like I had made that first move, and I was too excited to slow down at that point. I just wanted to keep going. So I contacted my aunt, and I said, you know, I wanted some advice from her. You know, how do people normally do this? Do they contact the child, or do they send a letter to the adoptive parent? You know, what's your advice? You know, we talked about it, and she just told me, how about I contact her? How about I send her a message through Facebook and just say, you know, I'm your great, you know, this is who I am. I think you are who you are. Your mother would like to meet you, you know, blah, blah, blah. So she sent a message to my daughter through Facebook, and she told me the minute she hit send, and my heart was just, I couldn't breathe. I don't even know how else to describe it. I couldn't breathe. I was so scared. I was so nervous of how she was going to react, or does she know she's adopted? You know, am I going to ruin her life? You know, if she does meet me, is she going to be ashamed of me? Is she going to be proud of me? What will she think of me? Will she like me? I wasn't even concerned with, you know, will she love me? Will she even like me? Because at this point, even if we met, we'd be strangers. So we'd have to get to know each other. So would she even like me? Just there were so many, so many emotions going through my mind. It was a couple hours later, and I got a message from my aunt. And she says to me, I got a message back from your daughter. And she said, and she wants to talk to you. And I just started smiling. I didn't even know what else to do. And my daughter's there with me, and we're just cheesing, like, are you serious? Oh my God, this is crazy. I can't believe this is about to happen. Like, really about to talk to her. And so we did a group chat on Facebook Messenger. She said she wasn't ready to hear my voice, but she wanted to, you know, like, message me. So we did a group message on Facebook, her, my aunt, and I. So my aunt kind of introduced us, I guess you could say. I couldn't believe it, because her conversation started with, hi, mom. And that was the last thing I expected. I never, ever imagined that even in the best relationship that she would ever call me mom. That really floored me. I didn't even know what to say. I was shocked, but I was so happy that, number one, she wanted to talk to me, and number two, that she called me mom. It was just amazing. So we just chatted back and forth, and, you know, asking each other questions, and, you know, if she knew she was adopted. And she said she found out when she was 16. Unfortunately, it wasn't a very nice finding out, and ever since then, she had been praying that I would contact her. So that made me very, very happy. But at the same time, I felt really bad because I waited so long. But now I think back, and maybe it was just wasn't the right time to find each other before that. I don't know. But, you know, I did feel bad that I waited so long. But I just was so, again, I was so worried about how it would affect her. I didn't want her life to be turned upside down. And even if she wanted me to find her life was still going to be turned upside down, but I didn't want it to be completely flipped upside down if she didn't even know that she was adopted. We just chatted for quite some time that evening, just asking questions, and it's just amazing. You know, genetics are amazing, because at the time I had just relocated to a different city. And I had been in the medical field prior to this relocation, and I left the medical field and I went to work for the government. And it was amazing, because I started asking her, like, what she did. You know, like I said, she's 25 years old. She's, you know, she's a grown woman. So I, you know, asked her what, you know, where she lived, what she did. And she had relocated to a different state. She was no longer living where we were from either. but her job that she was doing was the exact job that I did in the medical field. From the whole time I was in the medical field, we literally had the same job. And it was just fucking ridiculous to even think about, because, you know, we never met. We didn't, I mean, we met, you know what I mean? But she just seemed so much like me already. I couldn't even handle it. It was just so weird. Like, I can't believe we did the same job. It was really, really, it was something.
Was there any mention of that box?
That did come later in our relationship. I walked on eggshells around her for quite some time. I just wasn't sure. She was very welcoming. I mean, she was all in, but I still wasn't sure. Is this a mother-daughter relationship? Is this a friendship? I wasn't sure how to approach her with things. And even now, 3 years later, I'm still kind of, I'm not always sure what my place is, and I never want to overstep my boundary with her. But once I got to know her a little bit more, and I did ask her one time if she ever got that box. And unfortunately, the news was not happy on her side. Her adoptive mother is not exactly pleased with our reunion. But no, they never did give her that box, and they were never truthful with her about me either. Mostly her mother. She hasn't made it easy for our relationship.
How did your guys' relationship progress from that first conversation?
The very next morning, I was getting ready for work, and she texted me good morning. And it just started getting easier after that. She decided she didn't want to hear my voice until we met in person. So we did a lot of texting, a whole lot of texting. And we made plans to meet. We were going to go back to the city where we were both from, because I wanted my family to meet her. You know, I wanted her family, I should say, her family to meet her. And so we planned a party where the families could come and everyone could meet her again. And just, you know, just basically a welcome to the family party for her. So we planned that, which was a couple months after we had that first conversation. So we decided to meet the weekend of the party. She had a boyfriend. She has a boyfriend, her fiance now, but she wanted him to be there. So it was him and her and me and my youngest daughter. We planned to meet at, it was a restaurant. We were just going to have lunch because we just weren't sure, you know, how do we do this? And so we just decided to have lunch. And we just kind of met in the parking lot, and she had told me in conversations that pink roses were her favorite flower. So I got some pink roses, and I got her kind of a keepsake gift from the family, kind of a family heirloom type gift. And I got to the parking lot, and I was so nervous, and I knew she was on her way, and it was crazy. So we just sat there and we waited, and then I seen her car pull up. She told me what the kind of car she had, and got out of the car and just, I don't know, it was weird. And she looks so much like me. It's so weird. And it was like looking at myself in high school. Like, it was almost like looking at myself when I had her. Her and my daughter hugged first, and I just kind of hung back because I was just in awe. I was just looking at her. I couldn't believe that moment had come. But, you know, after all these years and all the heartache and everything that I went through and everything that she went through, and I just couldn't believe that we're finally going to try to see how this goes and try to get to know each other. And it was just amazing. And we had a great lunch and took a lot of pictures. And that was the first meeting. And then we had the party for her, and a bunch of family came from my side of the family. And that was real nice. And we talk every day, not necessarily, you know, on the phone, but we at least text every day. And as far as her and I are concerned, our relationship is great. There have been some issues, like I said, with other parties. And she did ask me to help her find her biological father as well when we first met.
Do you feel like there was a big empty spot in you and it's now been filled?
Yes. It still feels somewhat empty. It's not completely full. It's full because I've met her and she's fantastic, and I know that she loves me, and that makes me very very happy that she doesn't hold any grudges. She let me explain everything that happened and why it happened, and she doesn't hold it against me. But the reason I would say that that hole is not completely full is because I still feel, even though I know what I did was what I thought was best for her at the time, I still feel a tremendous amount of guilt that I didn't just, man up and just do what I had to do. I do feel a lot of guilt for that. And it's hard because, I find myself talking to her sometimes, just sharing stories or whatever. And I'll want to say something like, something about one of my other children. And I stop myself because I feel bad, because I feel like I couldn't raise her, but I raised two others. And I don't even know how to explain that. It's very conflicting for me, but not because of her. She doesn't make me feel guilty in any way at all. She's been amazing about it. Like I said, I contacted her biological father, and she is in contact with him as well. And like I had mentioned before, she used to compete in bikini competitions. And the first year that we met, she had a big competition coming up. And she asked if I would be interested in, going there to see her compete. And, I was ecstatic. Absolutely, I would love to see you do that. So we planned this trip. And so we planned my husband, my daughter, and I to go. And she contacted me and she said, do you mind if he comes to the competition as well? I told him about it and he wants to come. And I thought, sure, no problem. If you want him to be there, that's fine with me. So him and his wife were going to come to the competition. So we all go down, it was a good time, and hung out for a couple of days before the competition. And then it was just amazing because she had been competing for, a couple of years at that point. She got up on stage and she did her thing. And I'll tell you what, she won the competition. It was the first time she ever won. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody, just the look on her face when they called her name. And it was just, we were all just so, it was amazing because, here it is, her first win. And she just, she found her parents and we were in the audience. And it was just an amazing feeling. It was fantastic. It was great. It really was.
At the very end of our interview, I asked her if she would want to record a message to her daughter in case she ever gets to listen to this episode.
It's been hard to talk about all of this. I don't even know if you know the whole story, if we've even been able to talk about it, but just wanted you to know some of the things that happened that led up to my decision to place you with someone else, to have someone else raise you other than me. I hope you know that I love you very much, and I always have, and that I am so very grateful that you have allowed me to be a part of your life. And I'm just happy that I'm a part of your life and very grateful that you have allowed me to be a part of your life.
I really love this story. I'm so happy that their reunion was a happy one. And I will admit that I totally started crying when she said that her daughter started the conversation with, "Hi, Mom." And if you're wondering why you didn't hear me sniffling like I normally am, it's because at some point in the past few weeks, I realized that I could mute my microphone during interviews and you don't have to hear that fucking mess anymore. Oh, I don't know. It's better that way, I think. This is a really weird thing, and I don't know if this is something people talk about, but growing up, I always thought if ever I had adopted kids, I would never tell them that they were adopted. And at some point, like, in my life, that thought process changed. But when I heard that this girl didn't find out until she was 16, I thought that seemed so wrong. And, like, I know it's weird because at one point I thought that's the thing that I would do. But I don't know. Weird random fact no one actually cares about, but I just thought I would share it with you. We go more in depth on how she found out during the little bit more episode on Patreon. And like she said, it wasn't great. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe, and I will see all of you next week.
Everybody has a secret.